Glad to be here, Ginger. Thank you for asking me to share the next, I think it's next 6 months I'll be out here on a Monday night or something like that, the next few weeks. My experientially, what this has been like for me, this journey for me, the spiritual walk. Before we got going, someone had asked me, was I going to do some reading? And so I've been kind of moved. Maybe I'll do some reading and elaborate and give some time for other folks to share as well. Two things before we get going. There's a theme that seems to run the past over 5 years now in my life pretty consistently, which is a little different than my early journey. And it is this, that I can worship the things that point to God, or I can worship the God that things are pointing to. And there was a time where I got caught up in a lot of, I shouldn't say caught up, but attached to mechanics and ideas and beliefs. And those were the very things that I thought were taking me to more freedom and experience the Lord, what the very things that were now blocking me. And there's something when we study Sermon on the Mount per Emmett Fox, that they're more principles than to be caught up in the religious dogma, which I thought was just a breath of fresh air. The other thing I like to just take a few minutes to share with all of you is I didn't just arrive at Emmett Fox. I didn't just arrive back in my church. It would have been nice if my journey was smooth and seamless like that, but it wasn't. I'm a cradle Catholic and did a lot of things as a little boy that I was told to do, and that was observed a rite of passage from the time I was baptized in the Catholic Church to something called communion and confirmation. And for the Catholics out there, they know what that's all about. And I would follow my mom and my two brothers to Mass on Sunday. She would go to an evening Mass on Sunday. And like most kids, I try to behave, but found it a little boring. I was always enamored with priests. In fact, probably until I was around 17, maybe 18, I really wanted to go that way. I thought it was absolutely just breathtaking to watch these men serve and the authority they were given and the compassion they showed. And I was just taken in by all of it. My life took a vastly different turn by the time I was 18 or 19. But my mom would take us to church, and I think a lot of her reason for going, my mom was suffering from alcoholism and narcotic addiction and mental health issues and severe depression. And in January 1974, after a handful of attempts at suicide, she succeeded. And my world fell apart, quite frankly. And as far as my religious instructions, and my mom always telling me that with God, all things are possible, and he's compassionate, and believe in Jesus, I was never an atheist, but I lost faith in watching this happen to my mom. And without getting into much detail, it was within a few years after I was 14, I was doing exactly what my mom was doing. I was alcoholic and addicted to narcotics and just hell to pay for that. And there was no talk of God. I didn't have a relationship really with my dad. We just never got along. And my only contact with God, it would be the czar of the heavens or Jesus in particular, and cursing at him for taking my mom from me, giving myself a dad who's a tough guy that I didn't get along with, and turning me into what I did. And I walked away from everything having to do with religion, church, all of it. I despised all of it. And it's interesting. The second beatitude is about mourning. And the first one is about poor in spirit, which just fits into the journey I went on before I was able to wake up. And in 1988, my life turned around for the better. And I got sober and became part of a 12-step fellowship, and things just started to change for me a lot, drastically. However, there was something missing I found with about 10 years or so, and I couldn't put my finger on it. I didn't know I was being called back home. I was completely oblivious to that. And I would go to my religious community in streaks, 3-4 weeks in a row, take everyone's inventory, including the priest, criticize his homily, and say, you know, I can probably do a better job on that. And they, if they sang the Lord's Prayer, I would think it'd be blasphemy, and then I wouldn't go back. And then I go again, and then I wouldn't go back. And what this merciful God, we talk about a loving God, we talk about a righteous God, we talk about a powerful God. For me, it's the mercy of God that has me talking to you tonight after all I've screwed up so many times on my journey. And I was sitting with the gentleman who's from Denver, and he was my, I'll call him a spiritual guide, my mentor. And through some spiritual exercises, I shared with him about my resentment and my anger, my frustration, my disdain for the organized religion. I loved Jesus at this point, but I wasn't going to go into his house. It wasn't going to happen. And I got caught up in a lot of the headlines that we read in the paper about things that happen in the church. And I use it as wholesale condemnation against the whole community. And my teacher gave me, my mentor gave me some considerations to take a look at. And they were so profound that I swallowed hard and I had no pushback. I had no argument because he was spot on. He was, you know, I've learned this. The way sinfulness will always find me, I could outrun it for a little while. It's always going to find me. It's going to show up at my front door. So will the truth. And sometimes they're together because the truth is I'm a sinner. And this showed up at my door, and I could not get away from it. And I had to go back to something called confession. And I'm sitting with my priest in confession, and I told him, here's why I'm here. I've gossiped, I slandered, I badgered the whole institution, the whole Catholic religion. And I didn't know my life was about to change. And I sat with this priest in confession. It was maybe 10 minutes. It felt like I was in there for a lot longer. And when I got done with my spiel, he said to me, I'll never forget this, Father Tom was his name. He says, I understand. And it perked, my ears perked up. Because it usually is different. They say, are you sorry for your sins? Give you absolution, penance out the door, have a great day. And that wasn't the case. He said, I understand. And he went on to talk a little bit. And as I said, it could have been 2 minutes or 10 minutes. It felt longer. And I don't remember everything he said, but I do know how I felt when he got done with me. And I said, how can I fix this? What can I do to make it right? And he said to me, can you come to Mass tomorrow morning? And I did. I went with my wife. We were dating at the time. And I walked into 10:30 Mass. And as I'm walking in, my chest is vibrating. I have something here that says, it's from Romans 12:2. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of the mind. And that happens through the spirit awakening. This was going on for me, unbeknownst to me. And my chest is shaking. And I walk in and I sit in Sinner's Row, the last row in church. And the church begins. Now, for you non-Catholics, there's cues, and we do a little bit of an aerobics workout while we're in there. We kneel, we sit, we stand, we kneel, we sit, we stand, and I didn't know the cues, and I'm welling up with tears. And they got about two-thirds of the way through, they said the Lord's Prayer. This is way before COVID, so we held hands, and everyone said the Lord's Prayer together, and I couldn't stop crying because I was home. I went home. And the thing is about coming out of darkness, sometimes when I'm in my most darkest, when I feel like I'm in my most transparent and most vulnerable, is when God's light comes in and I'm able to find what Emmett Fox talks about, what she's talked about, was the kingdom of heaven. But I really need to be broken down first to the point where I realize I need to get away from me as far as possible in order to find whatever God has for me. And that began my journey. So much dedication to it that when Father asked me to become a lector and a Eucharistic minister, I was really taken back by it. I was able to serve in my church for about 5 or 6 years, and then COVID hit. Now I'm a fairly regular attendee, unless I'm on the road for a fellowship I belong to, which is a whole lot. And my priest says, we can give you dispensation if you promise to talk about God when you're on the road. And I go, I'll make a weekday mass or something like that. So that's been kind of my journey back to church, along with my sobriety. And it has opened up this huge door for me. God has given us, scripture says, God has given us an equal measure of faith. And I'm supposed to use that measure of faith soberly, not as a weapon against someone. What I also must do is cultivate it. Yeah, I must cultivate it. And part of the ways I cultivate it is by passing it on and talking about it. If I stop talking about what I believe in, I'll stop believing in it. So God has put me on this path little by slowly. I chop wood and carry water, and I'm supposed to do the Beatitudes. And one of the things I've learned, there's some interesting words in this. Words like poor, mourning, meek, or humble, hungry for righteousness, merciful, pure in heart, peacemakers, persecuted. Those are very powerful words that without the rest of the sentence is going to get my attention. What's this all about? The first one, Jesus says, is blessed are the poor in spirit, for the kingdom of heaven, for theirs is the kingdom in heaven. And Emmett Fox writes the following. It says, the Sermon on the Mount opens with 8 Beatitudes. This, of course, is one of the best known sections of the Bible. I've spoken to so many people over the years in search of. And when I opened up this book and did a lot of researching recently and over the years, I can't believe how many folks talk about the Beatitudes but are missing it by a million miles, which is really alarming. Catholics. And he'll talk about in a moment that he didn't want us to live like the Pharisees that were so connected to religious dogma and rituals and the things they were doing to purposely segregate themselves from everyone else, almost with an elitist attitude, which Jesus says, that's not what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be using these principles to find peace within, which will determine what I'm going to do when I leave this place, and to be with others. Unconditional love, not only for God, but for others. He goes on to say the following, even people whose knowledge of the scriptures is confined to a half a dozen of the most familiar chapters are sure to know the Beatitudes. They hardly ever understand them. This has been my encounter, unfortunately. And as a rule, look upon the counsel of perfection without any real application to everyday life. Nice to know. I have information. I have not had a transformation with the information. I'll check that box and go back to doing life the way I see fit. So I'll recite to you something out of scripture or the Beatitudes while I steal from my brother and pick his pocket. The Beatitudes, I'm sorry, but this is only because they lack the spiritual key. It says the Beatitudes are actually a prose poem in 8 verses, which is complete in itself, and it constitutes what is practically a general summary of the whole Christian teaching. It is spiritual more than a literary synopsis summarizing the spirit of the teaching rather than the letter. And that's what I was kind of alluding to earlier. I can memorize a whole lot of things. I've been around a lot of folks in South Florida. There's a huge Christian movement down here, and a lot of those folks attend 12-step fellowships, and they'll throw Bible quotes at you over a cup of coffee, but they don't seem to really live that. I'm more interested in the walk that the information has made for a person than the talk. It's cheap. I mean, I can get any high school or college kid and give them assignment and study part of scripture and come back and report to me. They'll do a great job and write out a great paper. They'll get an A+. That doesn't mean they've changed. What I need to have is a transformation, an awakening in the soul. I need to get soul food for this renewal of the mind, so my point of view changes, my perceptions and conceptions, not only about God, but about everything change. And these are a guideline to go out. That's how I've been influenced by them. So I'm just going to skip down to the next page where it says, The Pharisees, with their appalling code of outward detail observances, were the only people towards whom he was really intolerant. I mean, that's pretty interesting, that Jesus was intolerant to someone. These folks, as we know, were trying to constantly catch him in a lie with some sort of hypocrisy, because they knew that his presence were going to upset their apple cart, and they could not have that. He spoke truth. A conscientious Pharisee of those days, and most of them were extremely conscientious, according to their lights, had an enormous number of outer details to attend to every day before he could feel that he satisfied the requirements of God. So they're going around observing all these things, but yet they're using their status as leverage against someone who isn't as rich, who doesn't have the education, and Jesus' teaching was just the opposite. I'm going to skip down to the first one. And it says, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And he says this, here in the very beginning, we have to take into account a great point of practical importance in the study of the Bible, namely that it is written in a particular idiom of its own, and that terms and expressions and sometimes actual words are used in the Bible in a sense that is distinctly different from that of everyday usage. So I have some notes here that I've learned. Some of these are old notes, so bear with me. It says, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. One of the words we can substitute for blessed are favored. When God's favor, we have God's favor. Favored are those. Also, that I wrote down this, that it must be complete emptiness, which is poor in spirit, not necessarily referring, as we all know, to not having a lot of money. But poor in spirit, when nothing is in the way of me and God. There must be emptiness before fullness. Poverty in spirit precedes riches and grace in the kingdom of heaven. To acknowledge our deepest need for God and to grow in longing and dependence upon God. I can't approach God with attachments, belief systems, ideas, or ideology of anything. I need to show up to God as I did when I got back to church, or when I did in an abandoned building on the Lower East Side of Manhattan in 1988, when alcohol and drugs had beat me to a pulp. There was nothing left. I stood in God's light and I said, please take me from this. I don't want to die. There was nothing in the way. And at that point, I would do whatever I was told, whether it be by someone or God, to follow that path. what begins to happen, I start to feel good about me. I start to make some money. I get the relationship. And although my mouth will be saying how much I love and follow God, I'm really in love with my money. I start to worship other things rather than God. I start to worship my mind and my own self-reliance and my thinking rather than God, especially in adversity. Because when adversity hits, I'm going to rely upon me because God's not working fast enough. He's working too slow, and it's not going to go my way, and fear kicks in. And here comes my current agnosticism, and I get this book, and I throw it out the window. When things get good again, I pick up Emmett Fox, and I believe in the Lord all over again. And that's not what he's talking about. That I need to stand before my Creator in the raw if I want to experience the kingdom of heaven. That kingdom of heaven, I can have. Give us this day our daily bread right here, right now. I can experience God's kingdom on my way to work, tending to my children, being with my wife, whatever, at the gym, because it's something in here that happens. And if I live this way, I'll experience it in the next life that he has waiting for me. There's something that says, of myself I am nothing, the Father doeth the works. My ego doesn't even want to listen to that. My pride, my ego, the seven deadly sins, all these things stand in the way of what he's talking about, to be poor in spirit. I remember a teacher asked me one time, this gentleman from Denver, he says, Peter, how much money is enough money for you? And I said, $1 million. He says, come on, how much money is enough money for you? I said, $5 million. He says, come on, how much money? I says, $20 million. And he says, no, enough money for you is just enough money not to need God. And I heard him. When I got an expensive cigar and a pocket full of money and I get a promotion, I got the big house on the water, I don't really need to go to church today. Besides, I feel good and I start to see things that make me comfortable rather than sometimes the things God want me to do, which is some heavy lifting. Am I willing to be poor in spirit? One of the greatest freedoms I experienced was coming to terms with my brokenness, my sinfulness, and the flawed character I have, all given to me by God. I would try to resist that and fight it. I thought if I'm a sober gentleman and an active member in church, I shouldn't have that. That's beyond me. And it was a struggle until I came to terms with my brokenness and my flawed character and the greater need for God. Of myself, I am nothing. The Father doeth the works. Less me, more God, less me. I'll continue reading. Okay, here we go. He says on page 12 in my book, Sermon on the Mount, to be poor in spirit does not in the least mean that we call poor spirited nowadays. To be poor in spirit means to have emptied yourself of all desire, to exercise personal self-will, and what is just important, to have renounced all preconceived opinions in the wholehearted search for God. Old ideas, attitudes, and emotion, I need to set them aside. The arrogance of me to believe I know what God is and what God is not. It means to be willing to set aside your present habits of thought, your present views and prejudices, your present way of life if necessary, to jettison, in fact, anything and everything that can stand in the way of your or my finding God. What am I willing to sacrifice? What am I willing to surrender? What am I willing to have taken away from me? I love South Florida. But if God came to me in a message or a messenger and said, I need you to move to the hills of Montana where there's a lot of snow, it's kind of wilderness up there, but I need you to go there. I'll give you a job. I'll give you a really good income and a nice house, but I need light. I need light there, and you're selected to bring light there. Am I going to find another God? Am I going to negotiate or am I going to go? Because I found this, and Thomas Merton talks about this, and I'm going to paraphrase this, but awakening to God, I can think it's going to be butterflies and rainbows, and sometimes it comes down to a feeling of complete defeat. And part of the journey in experiencing God is the breaking down of me, which doesn't feel good, and a lot of heavy lifting to go in a way that I never did before. Am I willing to let go of my way of doing things? Absolutely. And willing to embrace a God that at the beginning I can't see yet, I can't hear yet, I can't touch yet, but I'm willing to go with the soul that's telling me to keep putting one foot in front of the other. Well, what an order. I can't go through with it. You know what makes me do it? Being called. I call that God's favor and desperation. When sometimes I have to look in the mirror, and I've done it many times over the years, look in the mirror and tell myself what I've done thus far does not work and is too much pain. God, please take over. Desperation does wonderful things. I can look at desperation as this punitive, bad thing, and sometimes it'll get my attention. God will create an environment to get my attention, which my mind is going to interpret as punitive. God's punishing me. God does not in the punishing business. He's too busy for that. Sin punishes sin. I punish me. I only have a few more minutes before we go to sharing. Okay. Okay, so we have, I'll skip over to the second. Ginger, I hope I'm doing this right for you. Let's get my notes. Okay. So Emmett Fox has the second one that Jesus talks about, and it says, blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. I remember the first time I read this, I thought it was mourning the loss of someone. That they're mourning the death of Jesus before the resurrection. But it really is about me coming to terms with that. My sinfulness has blocked me from God. I have a separation from God, and I can feel it and I know it. And there must be sorrow. There must be a breaking down. There must be a sense of death or a gift of desperation which screams out of the ego. I must get to a place that feels incredibly dark before I can see God's light. And the mourning, coming to terms with my brokenness is when I begin to experience liberation in God's power. I had to get to that place. The mourning is that sinfulness, my sinfulness has taken me to this place. And of myself, I am nothing. The Father doeth the works. Am I willing to surrender to this God? Now, that sounds like a bad place to be. It is if I stay there, but it is an opening of a gate to freedom when I get to that place. It's a false feeding of humility. It has happened to me many times, beginning in June 23rd, 1908, when sobriety entered my life, not knowing it was going to be God entering my life, when I hit a wall in my journey of sobriety around 8 to 10 years, and church came back into my life, and a gentleman out in Denver came into my life, and it changed again. And it changed again. And one thing I'm convinced about, I need to be growing in understanding the effectiveness of this God. I can't stay stagnant on yesterday's experience or yesterday's information, because that's all it will be. What am I doing today? When adversity hits and when good times come, am I treating with the spirit of gratitude and leaning on God in adversity to do his will, regardless of what my mind tells me I ought to be doing? Separation from God because of my sin causes mourning in my soul, and it is too deep for words. It is too deep to even express when the soul feels that. When I was in a hallway in an abandoned building in 1988, I've tried to tell the story numerous times, and but I never nailed down exactly what was going on because the pain and the weight was too great. But it was enough to move me to surrender to God. It was that morning. My sinfulness has put me in this position. I turned away from God. I turned away from everyone, and I worshiped a bottle of whiskey, and this is where I landed. Please, Lord, if you're out there, take me from this. I don't want to die. To me, this is what this is about. Last thing I will, what else do I have here? I had one other piece of note I wanted to read to you guys. Lord, have mercy. Ah, there it is. Okay. I can, through getting stuff, money, property, and prestige, and begin to worship that, I can hide, deny, and ignore my brokenness, my sinfulness, my turning away from God by getting deeper into seeking pleasure, money, property, and prestige, and I suffer the weight of that. Or I can get on bended knees and let God release me from all of that. And for a guy like me, I'd rather bear the pain of waiting for God than bear the pain of going on without God. So I'm a kid from Brooklyn with no college education. Well, I spent about 10 minutes in college and decided getting drunk was a better idea, and that was the end of my college education. And God doesn't really care about that unless he calls me in to do it. What he's really caring about is how I'm treating people on the street, how I'm treating my family, how I treat my wife. My wife is not afraid of me. My friends are not, they respect me. My friends are not afraid of me, they respect me. The people I work with respect me. And there's a whole lot in folks in Alcoholics Anonymous. Some don't like me, some love me, but there's respect. You know why? Because God has shown me how to give respect. So it's unconditional love. I'm grateful to be here. Ginger, I hope I did this right. That's all I got, guys. Peace.